Julie Zickafoos is a writer, artist, naturalist, and she is from Ohio. She also is an NPR commentator. Julie, welcome to the studios.
Thank you. It's so great to be here in the new studios. I'm looking at spring leaves outside. It's beautiful.
It is. We're very pleased with our studios, and we're very pleased that you've come to visit us. You are going to be speaking at the Glen Helen Auditorium. It's a creativity workshop?
It is. Actually, I'll be there Friday from 6 to 9 as well, or at the Vernet Ecological Center. And what I'll be doing is trying to shake loose some creativity in local residents here to inspire them to write down their own recollections of Glen Helen and, you know, what it means to them, and try and get people to maybe even record on Saturday with us.
So I want to go back just a little bit, and we'll talk more about the event, but I want to talk a little bit about your childhood and where this love of nature and the land and animals came from.
Oh, well, my dad was a farm boy. He was raised on a farm in Iowa, and from a very early age, he taught me how to plant and tend plants and gardens, and also about birds. And I kind of sparked on birds when I was about 8 years old. I saw a blue-winged warbler bathing in a little pool behind my house in Richmond, Virginia. And at that point, I had been obsessed with horses and cats, and that all fled my head when I saw that bird. It was like an instant spark. So from then on, I became obsessed with birds, and I've never let them go.
And you're the author of The Bluebird Effect, Uncommon Bonds with Common Birds. And that book was released maybe about a year ago.
Yes, it was March 6th, 2012. Yeah, and it's been very well received. It's a heavily illustrated memoir, basically. Lots of my watercolors and sketches in it.
Can you give us a few examples of what we'll find in the book?
Well, it's a very intimate memoir about the kinds of things that I've done with birds. There are 25 species treated in the book, and each chapter is devoted to a species. And my test for whether or not a bird got included in the book was whether I had some meaningful experiences with it, like having been its mother, or fixed it when it was broken, or studied its nesting cycle, something like that. So it's a very personal book. And there are some, you know, kind of startling things in it, like I never knew before I raised baby hummingbirds that their only sensory organ is their tongue. And so in order to find something out about anything that's presented to them, they lick it. Well, they will run their tongue right up your nose if you're not careful. So not many people can say that they've had a hummingbird lick their nose.
We could paint them red and maybe have a better shot at that.
Sometimes my nose is red without paint.
You're working on a new book as well.
I am. And it's a bit of a spinoff of The Bluebird Effect. It's boy, I actually haven't even talked about this, but it's going to be my working title is Baby Birds, An Artist Looks Into the Nest. And that's the thing that I love to do most, is follow the nesting development of baby birds. And I'm actively doing it on my farm right now, actually.
Some of the press materials for your upcoming appearance, beautiful watercolors of nature scenes, some birds as well. And are you a natural at painting?
No, I wasn't, if you ask my parents. My sister, Mickey, 2 years older than I, was naturally talented and gifted at drawing. She could caricature, she could cartoon. And my father used to praise her paintings and drawings, and he would watch me do this slow boil because I had no natural gift for it. But I worked so hard to try to better my sister. So I've been doing this since I was very, very young. My parents, to their credit, always kept a huge pile of computer printout paper on the kitchen table and all kinds of markers and crayons for us. And that's what we did for fun. I didn't know, you know, that there was other stuff that you did than read and draw. That's what we did.
Our listeners probably know you best for your NPR commentaries and also a series of commentaries that we have run on Why So Weekend. And beautiful stories, beautifully told and very well written. One that sticks out in my mind and one that I've certainly never forgotten is your attempt to prolong the life of a praying mantis.
Oh, never do that.
it was, I don't know, there's something about that story. Yeah. I understand what, can you tell us about it?
Well, you know, insects are designed to die in the fall. That's what they're made for. And I don't know if you've seen that movie Death Becomes Her with Goldie Hawn.
Yes.
And Meryl Streep, but basically if you take a praying mantis in at the first frost and keep it in your house and feed it mealworms or crickets or whatever you can catch for it, it will do fine for a number of weeks, and then it will start slowly deliquescing and dropping a limb here and a limb there. It's very, very sad, and pretty soon you have this poor three-legged thing hobbling around, and you realize that nature has a plan, and when you mess with it, you get to see the sort of ugly consequences. But I adore mantises, and they seem to have a sentience that many insects, I guess, don't convey to us. And you know, this thing, when I would walk by, it would reach out with her pinchers and ask to be given a ride to somewhere else in the house that maybe had a spot of sun. She was like a cat. It was an amazing insect.
A lot of your commentaries also deal with your family and home life.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Wow. I'm a mother of a 13-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl, and I've been prom dress shopping online lately. I had a little lesson in DNA the other day. We were frustrated because the nearest store to us is 2 hours away in Columbus. We're in the middle of nowhere. And my daughter and I had a fruitless shopping trip. So someone suggested we shop online at a large department store online. So there were about 4 pages of dresses, 50 dresses on a page. And I looked at them and I picked one dress that I knew would look fabulous on my daughter. She came in the room. I said, I'm not telling you. She went through the 500 dresses and picked the same dress. And I said, babe, that's DNA in action.
Tell us about your home. Now, you live or you've made your home into a nature preserve?
Yes. Basically, when we came, we bought 40 acres with an oil well, so we had free gas to heat our house. And then we subsequently bought an additional 40 acres to make an 88-acre sanctuary. And it's probably, well, but for our neighbors, 85 acres, these are about the only properties that aren't hunted or cut in the immediate area. You know, most people are selective logging and they're, you know, allowing a lot of hunting, turkey and deer and everything on their land, trapping. And so it truly is a sanctuary. And it's very interesting to see it go from a sort of exhausted, cut over, overgrazed, you know, and it was a commercial orchard. Very interesting to see it mature and to see things change, the bird populations change. We've been there since 1992.
As you detailed in the Bluebird Effect, the connection with animals and helping injured animals and being allowed into their confidence for a couple of months, I want to talk to you a little bit more about that connection between man and nature.
Yeah, well, that's I guess what I can offer most is an ability to go into the intimate lives of animals and birds just by stopping to help them. It's uncanny. For instance, yesterday, a morning dove arrived at my feeder, and I looked at her, and she looked familiar to me. I got my binoculars, and I saw her eyes were slightly misshapen, and she had a scar across the top of her head. Went back in my photos and my notes in my blog, Julie Zickovich on Blogspot, and I found photos taken on Halloween Day 2011 of a morning dove who had been scalped by a Cooper's hawk. I saw it happen. She flew into my studio window. The hawk veered off, but not before he ripped her scalp open with a talon. So here was this poor thing lying dazed on the ground with her skull completely exposed. Well, I thought about it, and I didn't think I could suture the skin because dove skin is thinner than wet Kleenex. I used superglue. And as soon as I ascertained that it was holding and it was healing fine, I let her go. Well, her eyes looked strange. It's like she'd had a facelift, sort of a Joan Rivers thing where her eyes were a little too – like her face was too tight. Here comes this thing, you know, 2 years later, comes into the feeder like she'd been doing it all her life. And I said, I know you. So, of course, I photographed her. This is the kind of thing that I do. I get involved. I remember these birds. Maybe they remember me. She sure looked at me.
And the feeling that you had when you saw her again and
realized. Oh, my gosh. It was fabulous. It was just – you know, it's – I call that blog gold, you know? If you've been doing a blog for 8 years and you have a nice story you can tell, a little kernel that'll come around and give everybody a satisfying ending, that's pretty awesome.
That's great. I know we're on a time limit, but I do want to remind listeners that on Saturday, May 18th, you'll be at Glen Helen Auditorium. Also, a creativity workshop taking place on Friday, May 17th, and you can get advanced registration details at glenhelen.org.
Looks like we'll be going all day Saturday, too.
Okay.
So I think they're gonna get their money out of me.
Great. And for people who, again, remind us of the Blogspot and your website.
Yes, Julie Zickefus on Blogspot, and that name is spelled Z as in zebra, I-C-K-E-F as in Frank. O-O-S as in Sam E.
Julie Zickefus, thanks for speaking with us.
Oh, it was great. Thank you so much.